Broadcasting from the historic 1047 studios nestled in beautiful downtown Valley City, it's the Toast and Jam Podcast. 30 minutes of local sports, trivia, news, and special guests. Hosted by Tim Oast and Paul McDonald. Sit back, relax, and let the fun begin.
I don't know about you, but I am getting a serious case of spring fever. Paul?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jam?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're also getting a feel of a new school in Valley City. That's what I'm feeling right now. We will talk about that and more coming up on this week's Toast and Jam. I'm Tim Oster, Toast. And here he is, the award-winning sports writer, Paul McDonald.
Yo.
He's Jam.
I'm jamming.
You feeling that spring?
I am. I am feeling it.
I'm feeling golf.
Oh,
we're about 2 weeks away. 2 weeks away.
Senior
tour. Yeah. Not the senior open. Yeah, right. How about the senior tour? Toast and Jam broadcast from the 1047 studios in the Valley City Times Record building in downtown Valley City and is sponsored by the North Dakota Army National Guard. And our trivia sponsor is Nodak Insurance, Chris Quilvang agent. And a big thank you to our executive producer, Eric Kringley. There is a lot of buzz about a new school in Valley City. We're going to get the lowdown on that from Valley City School Superintendent Josh Johnson. Josh, welcome to our show.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm feeling the optimism, talking about spring fever here, sharing some information about some exciting information relative to school districts. So it's all good.
You bet. We're going to do this, though. First, a word about the North Dakota Army National Guard. And Paul, he always does that so well. So I'm going to let him do it again.
Gee, thanks. thanks for throwing me another bone.
It's called the replay.
It's called the replay. Oh, yeah, the Army National Guard, many service options available. You can decide which is the best fit for your lifestyle. You can get a hold of the local recruiter, Madison Schlager, the local recruiter here at the Armory in Valley City. There are two paths to service in the National Guard. You can be an enlisted soldier or you can be a commissioned officer. I think you would have been a good commissioned officer if you followed your brother. You would have been a good commissioned officer.
You think so?
Yeah, you like ordering people around. Anyway,
oh, okay.
State tuition assistance for public and private institutions. Of course, the big thing, the combined federal and state tuition assistance program cover 100% of tuition at a North Dakota state-supported school. Get yourself a career, yourself a trade, get some education, serve your country. It's a win, win, win.
And they will make a real man or woman out of you.
That's for sure. They will. Absolutely. And we do appreciate you, all the folks and what they do for our country and the service that they provide.
Okay. Very
so
good.
So there it is. The numbers. Oh, let's give me the numbers.
Yeah.
Locally here, it's 49, I've got to get close to my glasses, 429-1098. 429-1098. I should have cleaned it before I started. Or, of course, Fargo 739-8848. That is the Army National Guard or ndarmyguard.com.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Toast and Jam here on a beautiful spring day in Valley City. And Valley City Public School Superintendent Josh Johnson on our show. And, Josh, of course, the board recently approved calling for a $46 million referendum to build a new school that would connect with Jefferson Elementary School. A vote of the citizens of the school district is coming up June 10th. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The choice is to go forward and build new or stay with the old and keep sticking all kinds of money into it to keep it going. Do you spend $37 million to repair or $46 million to replace is the question.
It is, and thanks, Toast and Paul, for the opportunity to be able to come on and have a chat with you this morning, share this important information, and our messaging has been making sure the citizens of the community, the voters on June 10th, have factual information, they have time, important information, and we're here to provide that, to make sure that everybody's informed come June 10th. So, you know, a few of the questions have been, what happens if, and how do we get to this point? And I think what's important to clarify again is the work that's gone in over the past 4 years. We've had multiple facility committees that have studied, looked at this, talked to the experts. We sent a community survey out in the fall of 2021. We hosted public meetings. And all that information compiled was presented to the school board. They looked, considered, to your point, Toast, do we put $37 million up to into repairing our schools, or do we seek to replace that? And the recommendation from the committee was to replace the schools, and so they put together a plan, presented that to the school board, and then the school board called for the referendum, which, again, important to note is goes back to the citizens of the school district, and that's the vote. And that's the decision that will be made on June 10th.
Tell us a little bit about the new school and what it all would entail.
Yeah, so let's go back and talk about kind of just, you know, what we're looking at here and within this referendum. And so the committee really dove deep and met since December all the way through March, looked at multiple options. And so they looked at the remodel, they looked at the repairs and what was needed to make that happen. We know that $37 million estimated cost of repair dollar out there. And again, those are specifically relative to the major systems within the school, the systems and infrastructure that are really becoming outdated. They need to be significant repairs, cost of repairs, and or replaced. And so the committee first dove into the age of the building, the cost to be able to do that, and recognized what other committees had looked at as well, is that it'd be more fiscally responsible to replace that and repair it. And so once they reached that consensus as a committee, they looked at locations. And so there was a few locations that were on the table that were considered, and that was up on the interstate. Committee felt like that was a little bit far removed from the community. Some other logistical issues with that. We looked at some land owned by Park and Rec, and that land was tied up as part of some grant funding, and so that wasn't available. And so one of the best options that was considered was to be able to consolidate the school. And so by retiring Washington Elementary, closing, selling, and then demolishing part of the high school, it afforded an opportunity to be able to consolidate up at a location just directly east of Jefferson Elementary, which essentially then creates a K-12 school. So we would keep the youngest Highliner students at Jefferson Elementary, and then a new building would be for grades 3 or 4 through 12 in a new building, and to be able to share the resources between both of those schools, all connected under one roof.
I'm trying to picture it east of Jefferson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One story, two story?
Two stories.
Okay.
And so one of the questions that we've gotten relative to that location is, boy, aren't you landlocked? And it's a good question and something that we've asked our experts and advisors with that as well. And so parking comes up relative to that. There's opportunities for expansion and growth around that. We know that we're going to displace some of the recreational areas. And so that's part of the conversation that we're having. Track and field, football practice, green spaces. And so we're also having that conversation with other organizations, baseball association, example, VCSU, Park and Rec. But planning, not finalizing those decisions right now, because again, we'd want to get the cart before the horse here. First, we need to have a decision made on June 10th, but we got to have those ideas and plans in place, knowing that there's going to be some displacement up in that area as well. Parking just does not appear to be an issue. There's ample space for parking for staff, for visitors, parents, and for our students as well.
Okay. Well, you know, you remember the movie Money Pit? You know, when you have an old building, that's kind of what it is. It's a money pit, and you never fix it completely. You're always going to be putting into it. And it just seems like, why wouldn't you just make up that little difference? I know that's not little, but I'm trying to understand why that would be so difficult. You know?
Yeah, and there's significant costs. When you're looking at repair
and repairs
and or complete replacement on this, there's significant costs to go into it. And so one of the questions that we've received is why have you deferred this maintenance? How have we gotten to this point? And a couple things recently is the cost of construction inflation has skyrocketed. We know that. Cost to repair your vehicle or your house, replacement, we know that is significant. But I would say that historically we've done a great job of maintaining our schools, but where we're at right now is the major systems have reached the end of their lifetime. And so that's where those costs come in. We talk about the HVAC systems. We talk about the plumbing. We talk about the electrical needs, the roofing, the windows, safety and security. The way our schools were designed was not the way they weren't designed in 1919 for 2025 or 2026. And so if we would repair, I think it's important for people to understand as well, is that we're not enhancing those educational spaces. $37 million is to repair or to replace those specific systems. And that's where the high dollar and high cost comes into those. And so we want to make sure people really understand that if we don't build a new school and an option has to come back and we have to look at putting dollars into our existing infrastructure, it's not going to enhance those educational spaces. Likely in 20, 30 years, we'll be back right around and looking at, you know, enhancing the educational spaces because it'll be that much older.
And wouldn't newer, efficient buildings maybe cost the taxpayer less than what we are right now with the old building?
So one of the priorities for us is cost savings. We know that putting everything connected under one roof is going to create a lot of operational efficiencies and cost savings, and maintenance is a big part of that. We know that the maintenance costs are going to be significantly less. It's just like the Highlander Activity Center. We put a lot less dollars into that than we do the 1919 school. Mm-hmm. The Hack, believe it or not, is 20 years old already, mm-hmm. but honestly, you look at it, it looks like it's brand new still. Yeah. And people commented on that is that there's no way that building is 20 years old already. And so similarly, there's going to be a lot less maintenance costs with that, but improved efficiencies across the board. And so there's cost saving opportunities from staffing, programs, maintenance, energy, utilities, and to be able to capture and to take advantage of that as well is really one of the priorities.
Okay. Enrollment. You know, there's that word there, enrollment, and the question is, where have all the students gone?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, the song, you know, where have all the students gone?
Toast is quite literally the million-dollar question, and it's the less revenue that we receive from the state of North Dakota when we're paid at $10,000-plus for every student, and mm-hmm. so that's hit us from a budget standpoint. And so the last 3 years, we've seen significantly less students coming into our kindergarten than what we're graduating. That's why we're facing the decline enrollment situation that we're in. We've evaluated, looked at school choice, so private school, homeschool education, jumping on a bus and going to the neighboring schools. And we haven't seen drastic changes in any of those categories for us. So we come back to birth rates, mm-hmm. the population. We know demographics changing. COVID, I think, had impact as well, is that people could work remote and they could you know, virtually, you know, access their place of work. And so are people, you know, choosing to live outside and still working in Valley City? And so those are some factors as well. And let's be frank as well, that like anything, education is a competitive world that we live in as well. And so as people are looking at picking and choosing where they're going to live, one of the things they look at is education. Now, when they look at and they drive by and they're touring a town, they're looking at the state of the facilities. They're looking at the amenities. They're looking at the quality of life factors. And now I think it's important to note that the age of our facilities, the issues that we're running into is not indicative and representative of the quality of education we have. However, sometimes we don't ever have that opportunity to be able to tell them about the wonderful educational programs and teachers and opportunities that their kids would have, because they drive by, they're looking at the old infrastructure and they're driving right down the road and they're checking out new schools in Castleton, they're checking out a new school in Mapleton, they're looking at the new updates in Maple Valley, they're driving over to Jamestown, checking out the new high school. And so it's a very competitive world that we're in, and mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we're part of solutions with bringing people to Valley City, and we feel like education and a school is a part of that.
Now, the building is perception, and they drive by and they go, oh, old school, I wonder what their school district's like, you know. The question that I was thinking about was, came here in the early 90s. 90s had kids graduating in that 100-plus easily. What has changed, though, in Valley City from then to now? It really hasn't changed that much. And we didn't even have John Deere seating at that time. I'm going, what changed? I don't know what the answer is.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, I think we have smaller families.
Smaller families has been an answer to that question, too, I've heard.
Yeah, I think smaller families is and again, I don't think this is something just specifically impacting us in Valley City as well. I think across the state of North Dakota, we've peaked in terms of our population, student enrollment for the first time in a long time, 15, 20 years now, is starting to go on a decline or stabilize. And so I think there's multiple factors at play here, and I think small families is a piece of that, the egg part of that, and farms, you know, consolidating and
smaller bigger farms, yep. But the smaller farms are gone.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. The new school vote went down a few years ago. How many years was that? Do you remember?
So the last, to my knowledge, the last vote we had in Valley City was 2003, and that was the hack.
But we never had a school vote,
no,
right?
No, it
was talked about
in the 90s that there were some conversations when the hack was built, rather than put it where it's at, to put it up near Jefferson Elementary. And so right. This is not a new conversation that Valley City's been having. And that's kind of the messaging we're trying to communicate, Toast, to your point, is that 30 years ago, Valley City was having this conversation about a new school and the location of where to build that and for what reasons. Mm-hmm. And so here we are 30 years from now. My fear, and I'm afraid that all of us may be long gone by the next time this conversation comes up in 30 years, if we don't address it now,
right,
would be, you know, what's the cost then? And so what I can tell you is that, you know, in the last 7-8 years, that cost has nearly tripled, mm-hmm, in the cost of construction, the cost to build. And it's unfortunate that we didn't do or didn't act and didn't do these things 10, 20 years ago. But we're in the now, and so we address this. But where will it be 10, 20 years from now?
Why did I think there was a vote a few years ago? We talked about it, though. You had some meetings on it, right?
Yeah, and that's a good and that's a good question, Tosin, and one that we've received as well. So we sent a community survey out, and we got that feedback. But the economy and the market at that time was just crazy. It was a roller coaster, mm-hmm, and so we never did call for the referendum vote in 2021. And so we just kind of rode that out. But at that time as well, the cost of construction was just skyrocketing.
COVID.
And COVID was occurring, and so a lot of instability of things that time we took a pause and you know, again, went to the next year and looked a little bit deeper into what our options were.
And what kind of a majority do we need for this vote?
This is so the vote on June 10th requires a 60%, so it's a super majority that follows the laws of North Dakota. The hack vote in 2003, I think, had 2,500 voters. And so, again, our messaging out there is we're going to provide information. We have a web page. We'll have public meetings up and coming, Q&A sessions. Our goal intent is to make sure that anyone in our community impacted has a voice, they vote, and that they have information. So they're informed, and we want 3,000 voters. We want people to come out, and their voice matters. It's important. This is an important decision, not only for our school district, but for the community.
Okay. And where will they vote?
Yep. So there's a couple options for them. Like our primary general elections, there will be an absentee option. And so they can contact the school district, 845-0483, or check out our webpage. There's an application to be able to complete an absentee. That will be at the beginning of May, when absentee voting will be open. And then in person on June 10th at the district office building, 460 Central Avenue. And the polling hours will be 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay, and question and answer sessions, when will those be held?
Yeah, so we have 4 public meetings that are scheduled. The first on April 22nd, I think the last on June 2nd. We have also some Q&A sessions that are an opportunity for anyone just to stop by and grab a cup of coffee, water, have a conversation, give some feedback, ask some questions. And we just want, again, make ourselves available to be able to address and inform and educate. And so we have four of those scheduled as well. We want to give people the opportunity to be able to get into our school. So each of those public meetings and Q&A are held at the schools and our district office, and so that information will get out on social media, newspaper, on our web page to make sure that people know the times, the location, the date, and really encourage people to stop by and have a chat, have a conversation, and then attend the upcoming public meetings as well.
Put a big circle around June 10th.
Yeah, June 10th, exactly. Exactly. And again, my responsibility over the next 63 days, I believe it is, up to June 10th, is to make sure that people have the information.
Yeah.
It's not to tell people how to vote. It's to make sure that factual information is there, that when it comes time for them to put their vote down on a piece of paper, a ballot, they have an educated opinion.
You know, there was something I had on the list here, too, and we didn't get to it yet, but putting together a school building grades 3 through 12. Any questions on that?
Yeah, so let's talk just a little bit about that, and that's maybe a little bit of a pause I had earlier to us when you asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
And so preschool education, what we're seeing with some recent trends is that our neighboring school districts have jumped into a state program offering four-year-old free preschool, and we believe that that is a draw. It's attracting right now for our young families, saving a lot of dollars for them.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to go to Barnes County North or Maple Valley or Litchfield, Marion. All three of them have preschool programs. And so we are looking at that. We've applied for that program right now if we receive that. So that would be up at Jefferson Elementary early as next fall. And so that would be the pre-K through second grade in Jefferson Elementary, because pre-K would replace third grade in that building. Third grade then essentially would become part of Washington. And so that's why we're saying with this new school that it would be grade 3 or grade 4 through 12, all dependent on what happens with a preschool program. But we want to make sure, again, that the opportunities are out there for parents. Looking at partnering with Head Start as well, and just to make sure that our kids coming into kindergarten are ready. They have that opportunity to jump into school. And so that's an option on the table currently.
One more question. How do you build a building when the enrollment is so questionable? How do you build for size?
Great question, and that's been a popular question that's been asked as well, is that enrollment's not changing anything relative to what our needs are in our school facilities. The aging buildings, the cost-saving opportunities are still existing, still there. But what we are looking at doing is being able to right-size a new school. And so part of that, we're looking at decreasing square footage, significant square footage right now that is really being gobbled up in inefficient manners in the high school. And so 60,000 square feet less. I want to make sure that people understand that when we say that there's still growth opportunities. So we're still designing those classroom spaces to match the existing spaces, classrooms in our schools, but being much more efficient within that. And so an example that I just want to specify relative to that is if we have one cafeteria, one kitchen that can serve K-12, we have now reduced from three kitchen staffs, three, cafeterias down to one. And so that's an example just in terms of being operationally efficient and not needing as much square feet when we can serve, 950 students over the course of 2 hours mm-hmm. in a similar type of space. And so that's where you get the reduction in the square feet and what we are referring to as right sizing our schools. And that's going to, again, result in major cost savings for us, be significantly more operational efficient.
Okay.
Again, the website, you mentioned highliners.org, and up at the top there's a tab that says referendum. That's where they can get everything that they need, and questions can be answered. And watch for videos, too. That's a kind of an interesting side thing that we haven't done before.
Yeah, it is, Paul. And so on that website, we're going to put some informational videos in there and some school people, some community members. Again, just providing factual information, addressing some of the questions, talking about facilities, talking about how we got to where we're at today, You'll hear from Board President Sherry Horsager talk about the school board decision to this point. And we'll have conversations with others as well, facility director. We'll talk about school safety and security. I think there's 10, 15 videos that are planned between now and June 10th. And so we want it to be a one-stop shop. We appreciate all the additional information that can be put out there by the Times Record, by I3G. Just making sure, again, the priority for us is to make sure that come June 10th that people have had access to, have the information that's available to them to be able to make an educated, informed vote.
I know we talk about the property tax thing. People get blah, 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 they hear that. But is there a calculator on that referendum tab that people can figure it out for themselves?
Yeah, there is. And there's a pretty user-friendly tax calculator to be able to punch in your tax statement information. And so if anyone has any issues with that whatsoever, call the district office. Again, you can get a hold of me. You can talk to Jackie Cordy with that. And some of the questions that have maybe gone beyond that is, how does the city or how does the county assess properties? And so we've also connected some people with city or county officials as well to help better understand the assessment process and is this true full value? And so there'll be some education of that as well that we'll be able to provide some explanation. That'll be a video too, Paul.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, Ben Franklin had this saying, words of wisdom. Here we go. Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn. Ben Franklin.
Well, there you go. That's
kind of ties in with what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely does. And you know, we look back, Valley City Public Schools, Valley City has a really proud history. There's been a lot of school facilities. Most all of them, believe it or not, are right in that Highland Activity Center on that block. And so from the first original schools and over the course of the years, Ritchie 1, Ritchie 2, and how we've prioritized education in this community. And
the all-star staff that they've always had at the elementary schools, the high school, the junior high.
Absolutely.
It's been incredible.
Across the state of North Dakota, across the country, we hear a lot about teacher retention and teacher shortages. And we are so blessed in Valley City to have an outstanding staff. Historically, we have an excellent partnership with VCSU, the number one teacher college education system, not only in North Dakota, in the Midwest. And so I think that's a direct benefit for us, filling the positions, openings rarely that we have, but filling those positions as well.
Very good. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just love your guys' optimism for spring starting off this morning. You know what? The next 63 days, you know, prepping for the vote on June 10th is going to fly by, but let's make sure we take some time. Stop, you know, smell the roses, you know.
Listen to the birds sing.
That's right, exactly. So, and I appreciate you guys and appreciate your enthusiasm for Valley City and sharing this information out there. Just again, it's an honor to be part of a great community and school district and excited again on directions that we go in.
Well, thank you for all you do, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank awesome. You guys. Very good. Josh Johnson, Valley City Public School Superintendent on Toast and Jam here this morning. And let's maybe just do a little recap on some sports. If you missed it last night, did your team go down last night, Josh, or did you have a team NCAA men's championship?
My team lost.
Duke? Duke.
No, Houston. That was my bracket team. So
really?
In the Johnson family. So I finished runner-up because the Cougars lost the heartbreaker.
Yeah, that was a heartbreaker. I thought they had it. But that's Florida. They do it all the time. They come back and they beat teams.
Yeah, we got to get a shot off. When you have 19 seconds on the clock, we got to get a shot off. They'll have a good team next year again, so we'll see where they do.
Okay, very good. And of course, Duke was beat. That was a big upset, I guess.
That made me happy.
Duke seemed to be the team to beat, and boy, I was surprised when Houston beat them. But, hey, that's why we play the game.
That's right.
Exactly. Women's, of course, that went to Connecticut.
Yeah.
UConn, again.
Yeah, but I was surprised that they win by 23. I mean, they blew them out of the water.
Yeah. Our twins?
Hey, at least they're winning. They got a win now. Well, they got some crooked numbers in the win column.
Well, last week when we talked, they were four games under 500.
Yeah.
They're four games under 500 again.
Yeah,
so
but at least they got wins now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 3-7. Okay. T-Wolves are hanging in there. That's a crazy race in the NBA.
They're in that sixth spot right now. There's like three teams that are vying for that last playoff spot.
Yeah. Okay. College basketball portal is wide open. Man. UND, the big one. UND, Schiller goes to NDSU. That was a big one. I couldn't believe that. Anyway, high school spring sports, Valley City High School. Spring sports.
Some changes. They were supposed to play baseball last night. That now is May 5th. The baseball team will take on, I believe it's Davies, on May 5th. Softball. They were supposed to be home tonight, and they will be at West Fargo instead. So the softball team will be at West Fargo. They did get a couple of games in. They played at the Nelson Bubble over in Jamestown here last weekend. Played two teams and went to the state tournament last year. DeLax Burlington and Thompson dropped both those games, but now they will be on the road at West Fargo tonight. Tennis, they start at the end of the week. Their first match will be up against Grand Forks Red River on the 11th. And they are actually going to be scrimmaging Minot, the team they beat at the state tournament last year, also this week. So they get a little scrimmage in.
Nice.
And I think they did that last Friday. So that's what's going on with tennis. Golf, they're still a week away from doing anything right now. And track and field, they're in Concordia. At Concordia today, they got an indoor meet at Concordia, and then that's it for the indoor season.
Okay.
And outdoor season will probably start, hopefully, at the end of the week.
And VCSU?
VCSU baseball and softball are scheduled to be home against UJ this weekend. Should make it. Looks like it'll be okay.
And do some quick melting here.
They need to melt it and get the fields ready. The baseball plays Friday, Saturday against University of Jamestown, and softball plays Saturday, Sunday. It'll be senior weekend as well for the Vikings. The softball team's actually doing pretty well right now. They are towards the top of the conference. And baseball team struggling a little bit in the non-conference. Did well in the non-conference, but now the conference season has started. Pretty good baseball conference, the North Star. And they are looking to get back on track. I want to say they've lost five in a row right now as they get ready for this weekend.
Okay.
And that's where that track is going to be on the road this weekend. Golf is coming off. They're actually golfing today
where?
In Sioux Falls.
Oh.
Sioux Falls or Madison, but they're in South Dakota.
Banana Belt.
Yeah, and they are golfing today, day two of a Dakota State tournament.
Gotcha.
Well, that's what's going on with VCSU.
Okay, and again, senior tour gets underway April 23rd.
Right.
That's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Okay.
And that'll be in Castleton. So
it usually does start in Castleton, doesn't it?
If we have some of the old duffers out there that are going to be golfing in the senior league, April 23rd, Castleton, 10 a.m., don't be late.
Maybe I'll come out for that first one and watch. I'll drive the cart for you.
Okay. That'd be fun. Yeah.
I did that once last year. I went out there.
Yeah, you did.
Followed around with Bjornsson. That's right. At the country club.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that again. That's awesome. But again, that starts up here. And we'll try to get Todd on sometime. I don't know when.
Todd Thompson. Runs the tournament. Runs the league.
He runs the league, and he does a great job. I've had some offers to golf in the Fargo Senior League. I still like
Look at you getting offers.
Yeah, offers, yeah.
You need a manager. You need an agent.
I need an agent, yeah. See that money rolling in. Like I didn't get paid. Like I didn't have to pay enough in taxes this year. Yeah, it's really funny. I paid more in taxes this year than I ever did when I was working.
Well, there you go.
Figure that out.
You have to start working again.
Yeah. Oh, well. Let's get into our trivia, and then we'll wrap things up here today. Trivia, we're going to do a little something different. Our trivia is brought to you by Nodak Insurance, Chris Quilvang, agent. And last week's question, do you have that handy?
Last week's question was, who was the first designated hitter to hit a home run? Who was the first designated hitter when the designated hitter rule came in?
What year was that?
1973.
1973.
And it happened on April 6th, 1973. I know this because I just heard it on Sunday.
Do you know the answer?
I do know the answer. I knew the answer before I heard it.
Okay.
Tony Oliva.
Tony O.
Hit a two-run homer for the Twins.
How appropriate is that, though?
Yeah.
Man.
They had, Twins Radio, they have the on this date type of thing. And on Sunday, and they had that.
Okay.
The call, Herb Kurnil's call of Tonio hitting the home run. Rod Crew was at second, a two-run homer. First time a designated hitter homered in a ball game, 1973, April 6th.
I miss Herb Kurnil.
I do, too. Wow. I got his book. I'd mind loaning it to you sometime.
I'd have to do that. Yeah. Okay, well, Trivia, of course, brought to you by Nodak Insurance, and you've got Easter right around the corner, and you know, you've always been talking eggs.
We got to get those eggs, you know, your Easter eggs, get them all in one basket. Well, insure them by a company that you can trust, like Nodak Insurance Company. The more you insure with Nodak, the more you're going to save. You can protect your home, your vehicle, your business, your collectibles, all your vinyl albums, anything you want to save, you get them insured, and they will do it at a price that will not break you. So give Chris Quilvang, the agent with answers. Give him a call at 845-2912, Nodak Insurance Company.
I had originally said that I would give you 10 questions. I'm going to do 5 today,
okay?
Because of time. But I've got my official baseball trivia.
Now, this
bucket.
Is a new segment here.
This is a newer segment. We're not doing the This Day in Sports and birthdays.
Okay, good.
We're going to change it up a little bit. Got to change it up a little bit.
Right.
Change is good. For some. In our world today, I don't know if it is. But anyway, let's hit the topics.
Okay.
Okay, you pick one.
All right.
World Series, record breakers, stadium stats, history, mascots, managers, umpires and announcers, pitching greats, odds and ends, streaks, the science of the game. There a science to that game?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Superstitions.
Okay.
Legends. Okay. Eat, drink, and play ball.
There we go. Yeah.
And movies.
Let's go with World Series.
World Series.
We'll go right at the top. The first one, World Series.
World Series. Okay, and we're going to go to page
7. I'll take World Series for 200, Alex.
Okay, I got you covered there. World Series. Okay. We're going to do 5 questions. We'll see how you score.
All right.
What year was the first World Series played? This is multiple choice.
1903.
Oh, 1903. Best of 9 series.
Yep.
Between the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Boston Americans.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump the gun on you.
Gee whiz.
Trying to save time here.
I know. I can see. Which team has won the most World Series titles? I don't think you even need multiple choice here.
No.
Because he's a Yankee fan.
Yeah. The Yankees, yes, obviously.
Yeah. They've played in 40 World Series.
27 or 28?
27 titles. Yeah. Not a bad percentage.
Not a pretty good percentage, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's see.
I'm 2 for 2 right now.
2 for 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which player holds the record for most walks in a single World Series? Willie Randolph, Barry Bonds, Joe Gordon, or Hank Thompson?
Most walks in a single World Series?
Yes.
I'm going to say Willie Randolph.
Barry Bonds. Yeah,
I was probably the obvious one.
Yeah.
Walked, intentionally.
Yeah, walked in 13 of his 30 appearances in 2002.
All right. So I'm 2 for 3 right now.
2 for 3.
Not bad.
Batting
not bad.
675.
Not bad.
Yeah. Let's see here. Which baseball great hit the first pinch hit home run in World Series history? Which baseball great hit the first pinch hit home run in World Series history? Yogi Berra, Joe Jackson, Ted Williams, Ty Cobb.
Pinch hit home run?
Yes.
Yogi Berra.
Yes, sir. Yeah, 1947. Mm-hmm.
And this is for all the money right now.
Right here. You're 4 for 5?
3 out of 4 right now, so I'm going for 4. Yeah.
You're going to go for 4 for 5. Okay. Okay, let's see. I'm still looking over the questions,
yeah,
trying to make it tougher.
I know you are,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Should be playing Jeopardy music right now.
Okay.
All right.
Who was the youngest World Series MVP?
Ooh.
Lou Burdett, Sandy Koufax, Brett Saberhagen, Johnny Bench.
The youngest World Series MVP, I'm going to say Brett Saberhagen.
Absolutely right. 1985 World Series, Kansas City Royals, was 21 years, 6 months.
Yeah, old. That's
he was
a heck
barely
of a guy.
Crawling. Anyway, 21 years, 6 months, 16 days when he won the award, MVP.
There we go.
Wow.
I got 4 out of 5.
Four
that's not
out
bad.
Of 5, that's pretty good
that's
for
pretty
an old
good.
Guy.
Do I get a gold star in the fridge?
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, maybe a pizza later. Who knows?
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm all about that.
Okay.
Boy. One quick thing with trivia. Unless you have something you want to do, do your words of wisdom at the end.
I did that already.
You already did with your Ben Franklin quote?
We can do it again. Ben Franklin, tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Involve me and I learn.
Okay. That's how I like it works. That one. That's Ben Franklin. Check out Sports Illustrated. They have a new
I thought greatest... they had a story on us.
No. Well, okay. I thought you were going to be on this list because it's the 50 greatest sports athletes or sports figures in each state.
Oh.
And in North Dakota, you know, the top 50. Jeff Boshy came in number 30.
Really?
Yep.
Anybody else we know? Like Darren Erstead?
Darren Erstead's number 3.
Oh. Roger Maris.
Number 1.
Of course. Phil Jackson.
Number 2.
Okay. Who would 3 be? Dave Osborne.
No, Darren Erstead was 3.
Oh, that's right, 3. Okay.
Andy Hampston from Grand Forks was 4. Lou Olson.
Who?
Andy Hampston.
Oh.
Only American to win Tour of Italy and Tour of Switzerland. He was a bike rider.
Did not know
there
that.
You go. Lute Olson was number 5.
Okay.
You know of Cushman Field in Grand Forks. Yeah. Well, Cliff Cushman is number 6.
Hmm.
All-time Kansas All-American hurdler.
Pete Retzlaff, did he fall in there anywhere?
Retzlaff? I'll thumb through it, but I didn't see his
name. He's the old Ellendale boy.
I did not see him when I was thumbing through this. And, excuse me, number 14.
Pete Retzlaff,
Pete
really?
Retzlaff is number 14.
Done. Phil Hansen?
Oh, he's
down a ways.
He's in the 20s.
Tom Hoagie.
He's not there.
Oh.
No.
Really?
No, he's not there.
Hmm.
Rick Helling, I did his games when
Rick
he was
Helling.
In Legion Baseball.
Yeah.
He was number 17. Hansen is number 20. So people look this up. You can go online and
Jeff
find
Boshy
it.
Was 30.
He was 30th.
I thought he'd be a little higher than that.
But he was 30th.
Okay.
So there you go. Check it out. There's one for each state.
I didn't show up in the top 50?
You were not in the top 50.
Huh.
Sorry, buddy. Neither was Josh Johnson. I'm surprised at that.
Wow, yeah, no kidding.
Devil's Lake kid, I'm surprised he wasn't in the top 30.
Eagle Staff.
Yeah, Eagle Staff.
Robert Eagle Staff?
I don't think the new ones
No, I mean Bob Eagle Staff. The old Bob Eagle Staff, Fort Yates.
Boy, I'd have to look through there. Sherry Kleinsasser, who you know.
How about
number 45.
How about Randy Hedberg?
Randy Hedberg, I did see his name in there when I was thumbing through it earlier.
Okay,
we'll, I'll just keep thumbing through it as we wrap the show up, but I did.
Who was the coach at Earhart? Ron Earhart.
And Hedberg is 31.
Okay. Ron Earhart.
And Ron Earhart. I just saw his name.
Famous
so he's
coach.
On the list. Bob Feeney from Bismarck is on the list.
Okay.
Brooks Bollinger, who quarterbacked at the Vikings briefly, he's on the list.
Okay.
So, I think. Well, that's some of them. I'll be here forever if I do this.
Went to school with Brooks Bollinger's dad, Rob.
Okay.
Bollinger. Dickinson State.
In Dickinson State.
Yeah.
All right. Hmm. But it's kind of an interesting list.
It is. Yeah.
You know, Virgil Hill, the boxer.
Yeah.
He's at number 10.
Okay.
There's some names here. I have no idea who they are because they were way before my time. Sid Sitchie,
great coach.
Coach at Shanley.
Yeah.
He's there at number
15. How many in a row? How many games in a row did they win?
Oh,
like
I think
60
it was
some?
60, yeah. Steve Myra from Wahpeton.
Yep, was NFL.
He was in the NFL with the Colts. Steve Blem, speaking of Devil's Lake.
Oh, no kidding.
Devil's Lake School for the Deaf, all-time leading scorer.
Yep, still has the record for most points scored.
Almost 4,000 points in high school
basketball. And he was deaf.
Ron Earhart was 23.
Okay.
He was number 23.
Did you know he coached at Jamestown College?
I did.
Yeah, okay. Then went on.
Check it out.
Wow.
That's Sports Illustrated's 50 greatest athletes for each state.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jeff Boshy, way to go. 30. Yeah.
Got 30th.
Okay. Is that it?
That should be it for us now. Yeah.
That's all for Toast and Jam this time around. Brought to you by North Dakota Army National Guard, our sports trivia sponsor, Nodak Insurance, Chris Quilvang, agent. Don't forget about our executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chris Kringle.
No, that's not Chris Kringle. No, that's not Chris Kringle. Not anymore.
It's Eric Kringley.
He's flying high right now. Cobbers beat St. John's in tennis on Sunday, so his Cobber boys, and of course, Kai, won his singles match. They've got 6 wins this year, most in 6 years for Cobber tennis.
Okay.
They won 5 in a row.
By the way, Eric Kringley is our champion.
Yes.
Yeah, way to go, Eric. And thank you for all the work you do for us. Paul, you already did your closing thoughts. You had them?
I don't have a lot of closing thoughts, but yeah. Okay. Don't forget Spotify and Apple Podcasts is where you can find us. Don't forget to subscribe when you look us up and listen and subscribe to us, again, on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Toastandjam.com. That's where we'll have that trivia question and all of our past episodes. This was number 63, so we are moving right along.
Okay. Hey, and a shout-out to Glenn and my old coach, Lee, Coach Elger. How you doing? Having fun? Take it easy. And we will talk again next week. That's it for Toast and Jam saying bye-bye for now.